presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Into hour two, we'll spend segment with Rich Migliori, and Rich making the drive down from the farm and taking in the start of the Belmont meet, the first 5 days, and all of them on Fox, America's Day at the Races. And it just seems, listening in and watching Rich, like you guys are having too much fun. Good morning.
Yeah, we are really having a good time, and it's just like everybody so excited to have racing back, and you know, trying to get some sense of normalcy in a crazy time in our history. But the racing was great, you know, and that certainly makes it fun and easier when you have such a great product to talk about. And you know what, we've got a great crew in front of the camera and behind the camera. I mean, the people that are in the truck, and you know, that the public doesn't get to see, they're the heroes, the unsung heroes in this. They just work tirelessly and make our jobs a lot easier. So I really thank the people that you don't get to see. They make the show go
well. And certainly, you know, I could think about you know, a handful of them that I, you know, that I know. And of course we heard from Tony last week, but Mitch and Eric Donovan, and you know, there's I've said this and discussed this with everybody, I mean with Andy mostly, but the work that goes into this show, Rich, I think it's finally, you know, sort of registering to people that this is essentially a Saturday, you know, network broadcast like we see for Breeders' Cup and Triple Crown days. You're doing one of those every single day.
You know, exactly. You know, and I so many of the people back there, and I'd be so remiss to leave somebody out. That's why I'm reluctant to start naming names. But I hope they know, and I know they know how much I appreciate them. Every night when I'm leaving, I park down by the video trucks. I walk down, and I just make sure I stop in to thank them, because I know how hard they work. They're putting in, you know, crazy hours, but their effort shows. I mean, you know, the product that we're putting out, I'm so proud of it. And it's because of the people you don't get to see. And you know, the hardest part for me is the drive back and forth, because once I get there, I'm in my element. I love it. I love being at Belmont, and you know, I love talking about racing. I, you know, have obviously such a love for racing. As you know, you think about Andy, I mean, that's all he thinks about. It's just the amount of work and effort he puts in is phenomenal. And I was thinking about this the other day, and as everybody else does on air, I mean, you know, you think about Maggie and the way she looks at horses and is able to articulate to people and explain to people what they should be looking for. Acacia's doing a great job. Jonathan, Greg Wolf. I mean, being the host is the hardest job as far as the on-air talent, because they're the air traffic controller, you know, and they've got something going on in their ear all the time, where they got to go for a commercial or some sort of read. And yeah, so they really, to me, those guys got to be even more prepared than what we do, and we've got to be prepared. But I was thinking about this, Steve. You know, when you're a rider, you don't really think that much about the fans or the bettors. You know, you're kind of into your own thing, and I know I was, and didn't really appreciate the bettors as much. And the more I started thinking about it, there's a lot of similarities between what a jockey does and what a bettor does. Now, you got to follow along. I go a little odd here, but everybody has an idea of acceptable risk. Now, a rider's risk is he knows it's dangerous and he kind of puts himself out there. And if you ride a bad race or you make a mistake, it's there. It's for everybody to see. So, you run the risk of embarrassment besides personal injury. As a bettor, particularly someone that's putting their picks out there in public, like Andy, like Jonathan, if you're wrong, people are like, you're a nitwit, right? So you're running the risk of being embarrassed. And then also you're putting up your money. So you, again, idea of acceptable risk. Now it's two different kinds of risks, but it's very similar in some ways. And this is the stuff you think about when you drive 200 miles a day.
It's something that, and you and I have talked about this before, that as you transition from the writing career into broadcasting and HRTV and XBTV work and you know the Naira contributions and now this opportunity, it's an evolution and you begin to fold in things beside just. What horse might be uniquely suited for the assignment, especially off a weekend like this, where there was so many specialty kinds of circumstances, the Carter, the 7/8, and we just talked to Suge about bringing Code of Honor back, and Vekoma with the performance, a horse like Newspaper of Record coming back after a unsatisfying 3-year-old year on the heels of an incredible juvenile campaign. So I mean, there's so many working parts to just. The horses and their assignments, and then you begin to layer in your understanding of the betting proposition, and it's why the personalities mix and match and meld so well, because you've got Andy coming at it from specifically a horse player perspective, and then all the other elements you mentioned, Maggie and now Acacia in for the meet, and you and whoever, Tom Amos when Tom is contributing as a consummate horseman, etc. So it makes a nice stew. We know from Twitter that you're a top flight chef. This is a bouillabaisse of opinions.
You see, but people don't know this method behind my madness. I'm looking for something from like the Food Network. Come on, guys, give a call,
There you go. Get me involved. Let's talk about some of these performances from the weekend. And I haven't, having just had George Weaver and Suge talking about the Westchester and the Carter, let's actually spend a minute or two on the turf races. And of course, Chad dominating the weekend, and in fact, also won the Bogey on Wednesday. Talk a little bit about what you saw and what your expectation was of Newspaper coming back. And, I thought it was a good sign, frankly, that this was her assignment and that she was going to start in a stake like this. But by all rights, a kind of a demanding situation, 7/8 on the grass. Give us some thoughts.
Yeah, obviously wasn't surprised that she won, but she had such a fast horse just outside of a Jakarta that, the way I saw the race, I thought, well, this is a perfect opportunity. Irad will get to hide behind her a little bit with legitimate pace in front of her. And he just kind of threw the reins out of leaving the gate, and she outran a very fast horse in Jakarta and just kept going. And maybe, ultimately, that's just what she wants to do, to be left alone, to her own devices, to be allowed to run free. When they were trying to stretch her out, obviously, because of the Belmont Oaks and races like that, you had to try to control that speed more. But I think up to a mile, just stay out of her way. Think like a female version of Lore. Because she kept finding. The ground was a bit demanding. We had that deluge right before, so it wasn't firm ground. And she certainly put up a time that made you believe that it was firmer than I know it was. And she had some good horses chasing her. And, of course, Chad finishes 1, 2, 3, 4. You just don't see that. And it speaks to the form he gets his horses in and the form he's able to keep them in. Because out of four horses, you expect, well, maybe one or two don't show up. His horses consistently show up.
this was one of those things that sort of cheers fans and players, you know, alike, you know, to have to sense that, you know, she comes back and is going to have a, you know, the kind of year that everybody was anticipating for her as a 3-year-old. And I wrote in my analysis, Rich, that she would not be the first filly to come back as a 4-year-old and recapture her 2-year-old form after having kind of an off year as a 3-year-old. And in fact, Shug was just on Storm Flag Flying, kind of had a, you know, that same kind of situation where she seemed kind of sour and just was not herself. And you know, sometimes it's a question of, you know, getting some Mary Mare into them, you know, some therapies, you know, being serious, of course, but, you know, physical therapies, yeah. they get distracted and they can become nasty, in fact, and they don't want to train. And a lot of people will then just take them off the racetrack. But if you persevere, this is not unusual for one to then, you know, get their focus back.
That's something that I used to talk about a lot with Alan Jerkins. He would talk about so many different fillies he had over the years that were brilliant 2-year-olds and just lose their form at 3, and like you said, lose their enthusiasm and not, you know, like just be kind of cranky, and how they would rebound as 4-year-olds, almost like they would go through, you know, some growing pains mentally, physically. But he used to talk about that a great deal, that and the same thing, though, that people would, you know, tend to pass them off to the breeding shed instead of persevering and having them come back full circle. But yeah, that's something he used to talk about a great deal. I think that's part of it with her, but I also think the other part of it is when, you know, trying to stretch her out, you knew you had to, you know, rate her a bit more or try to get her to settle more. And some horses just don't want to do that. They just want to be able to run free. And to me, this performance, I think, points that out. She just wants to be left alone to run the way she wants to run.
Nice. Well, a lot to look forward to, and Chad's going to send her, it seems, and Uni to Keeneland for the first lady. So we'll look forward to, you know, what has been an unexpected addition to the racing calendar. A few more thoughts, and I do want to talk to you about some jockey issues too, Rich. Before we're joined by John Sheriffs at about 10:45. The performance of Bacoma, which was just one of the jaw droppers of the weekend, and of course Volatile did something similar at in the Aristides, just, you know, drowning foes, and both recording over 110 buyers, 110 for Bacoma and a 112 for Volatile. Some thoughts about both of the two dirt races with Code of Honor and Vekoma's performances.
Well, they both were terrific in their own ways. You know, Vekoma was, wow. You know, he just was so impressive. Like you said, jaw-dropping. You know, I questioned on air, you know, and this is stuff we got to talk about because you're trying to educate people as well with the sloppy track, because he does have, you know, that kind of paddling action that's not the prettiest action, if he would actually, in fact, handle a sloppy track. Well, he answered that question with an emphatic yes. And if anything, it almost seemed to make his stride prettier. And we know it's not about being pretty, it's about being fast. But he was sensational. Great job by George Weaver. And, you know, obviously this is a major player heading into the Met Mile. And that's the thing about him. Not only does he possess speed, he's already been distances that shows he has stamina. So when you have his kind of speed, and it's controllable speed. He waits on the rider's cues. He was doing everything Javier Castellano wanted him to. You know, that's when you have something special, and obviously he's special. But Code of Honor, you know, he, in his comeback, I thought Johnny Velasquez just gave him such a confident, you know, first-time-back kind of ride. And when you can do that in a stake race, you know you're going to really build off of that, step forward from it. So, you know, I don't think his performance should be judged, you know, buyer speed figure wise or time wise or, you know, margin of victory wise. Think about it as he basically is shaking off the ring rust, and he should be able to really step forward from there. And that's what Shug is so good at, you know, getting horses to improve over time so that they have longevity. We've seen horses from him for years get better at four, get better at five. Code of Honor, not the biggest horse, most robust horse, but definitely filled out as a four-year-old in the right places where you feel like he has, you know, matured physically. I hope they both wind up in the Met Mile. I think that'll be a terrific matchup. And considering the contrast in styles, one having the kind of speed he does and, you know, in Vekoma, Code of Honor, more of a closing type, I'd love to see that matchup.
Now, we get a nice, it seems every week we get another, you know, two, three, four, five horses that keep coming back weekly and, you know, more or less, you know, setting themselves up for, you know, for big things, you know, down the, you know, down the pike as the season unfolds. And of course, you know, we're sort of jump starting the whole, the whole racing calendar. Rich, some other things that you were covering Saturday, Sunday. What else caught your eye from? You know, I know it's tough on the broadcast front. When the races are coming one after the other.
Well, obviously volatile. I texted Steve Asmussen right after the race. Like, what? What was that? Like, it was. You know, another just an absolute freak performance. And, you know, the interesting thing is volatile, you know, Breeders' Cup sprint, Vekoma's got options. You know, he could sprint, he can go a mile, he can go even further potentially. So, you know, I thought that performance was just as good a performance as you're ever going to see. And, you know, Honor AP, I really thought he was going to turn the tables on Authentic. You said you're having John Sheriff's on. I'm such a huge fan of his as a horseman and as a person. You know, he's somebody I consider a friend. As a matter of fact, will you do me a favor when he's on? Tell him, after I hang up with you, I'm going into town and shipping a book that he lent me back to him. You know, he's been waiting for it. So I'm actually going to go to our little post office and get it out to him.
I love it.
I love the horse's stride. It's so reminiscent of his father, Honor Code, you know, kind of his head out, down, very long striding. And a horse that, again, another horseman and a horse that's making these incremental improvements. He's stepping up. He's improving. And he's a three-year-old that I'm really excited about. Obviously, I think my personal opinion is Tis the Law is the leader of our division at this point still. You know, I mean, just off the Florida Derby and the way he's done things. But, you know, the scheduling of the Triple Crown races this year is so interesting and fascinating to me because you're going to see horses that develop and change different times of the year, and it's not packed into, you know, 5 weeks in the spring. And, you know, so much talk about it. Oh, the Belmont's a mile and an eighth. It's not a true Belmont. Well, that's all nonsense. And this, you know, what's been going on in the world and this pandemic and this craziness, that was the most prudent thing to do. Horses without foundation, without racing, asking young horses to a mile and a half would be unfair at this point because of the way things have happened. If a horse was to win the Triple Crown this year, I hear people saying, oh, it wouldn't even, it'd have to be an asterisk, it wouldn't even be the same thing. Well, it wouldn't be the same, but in some ways it'd be more impressive because they'd have to stay good for a longer period of time, stay healthy, keep their enthusiasm for a much, you know, a drawn-out period of time. So, you know, I love the game. You know, from a historical perspective, I'm more of a purist, but everything went out the window this year, and I think we've got to look at it from a different, through a different lens, and appreciate it for what it is. And I think, in some ways, it would be even more amazing that you know, if a horse was able to win all three of these races.
Well, and speaking of the three races, Marty McGee reporting with conversation from Brendan Walsh, Max Field is going to pass on the Belmont Rich. If you had not seen that in the last half hour,
I had.
Minutes.
That's too bad. I would like to have seen him.
Yeah, with the Derby the main aim, Brendan says we think it's the right thing to do, and you'd expect the, you know, obviously the Bluegrass right there, and you know, right.
Well, how
top
about Mark Cassie's horse on Friday at Belmont?
Well, it's funny you bring that up. I, you know, somebody asked me, will he wheel back? And I said, well, I said, Mrs. Weber, they have thought highly of him from, you know, from word go. And, I am a little surprised, but Mark, he was texting me about waiting for the figure, and he said, "I'm gonna pull a Woody Stevens and an Alan Jerkins, and I think we're gonna run back." So he'll help. I mean, he helps. You know, kind of. Because you know, people, the immediate aftermath here of this Max Field decision is going to be how it's 'tis the law 3-5, but we'll see.
Well, don't you think that horse galloped out of mile and eighth in about 146 and change?
He certainly
to.
yeah tap it to win and I'm glad, I guess, that they're going to do this. I mean, it is going to help. I mean, you know, I thought Charlatan was going to head to the Woody Stevens anyway. So, you know, having him with this arthroscopic ankle surgery and having him sidelined, that also, you know, for those that were thinking that, you know, with Nadal retired, that Charlatan would go Belmont, back to Belmont. You know, that obviously another thing that kind of took away from but I suppose Tap It to Win, you know, it adds a little bit back to the field. I mean, and I'm sure actually, if anything, Rich, Max Field not running might open up the door for, you know, two or three others that that thought that the water was too deep with Max Field and 'Tis the Law already.
Yeah, no doubt. I think it probably will encourage some other people to, you know, step up and give it a try. We could have a huge field, and you know, Belmont, the configuration of Belmont, the one turn mile and an eighth, that long run down the backstretch, it could be a brilliant addition of the Belmont Stakes, albeit not the Belmont that, you know, we normally have. You know, you think back to Woody Stevens runs Conquistador Cielo on a, you know, in the Met Mile on Monday, wins the Belmont Stakes with them on Saturday. That's 5-6 day turnaround. You know, last year Mark did it with Got Stormy 1 week. She beats the boys in the 4-star Dave. You know, I think when horses are good, run them, and when they're not, back off them. So I 16 days. I don't see why you couldn't do it. I mean, he was certainly impressive enough the other day, and. Yeah, again, we have to look at things through a bit of a different lens this year. I think this Belmont could be a lot of fun.
Well, and just looking, again, I hadn't looked at the prospective field for a few days. Let's give a glance, and this may morph, you know, pretty readily after, you know, this piece of news. But, you know, you do have the... the consistent the contingent from Pletcher, Farmington Road, Gouverneur Morris, Dr. Post, Linda Rice sitting, you know, very quietly, potentially, you know, to pounce with Max Player. Bill Mott, Modernist, of course, has been out of sight, out of mind. You got a very interesting race that I suppose this, I wonder if this news changes anything about the Biancone runners that are, you know, Sol Volante and Ete Indien are supposed to run this week, right?
Yes. And actually, you know what?
On Wednesday.
I've got to call Sanford Bacon, who's part owner of Ete Indien. He had left me a message and wanted to talk about where the horse was going. So, I got to give Sandy a call. But, yeah, no, you know, again, it's interesting because it's different, and people are going to have to make decisions on the fly and as their horses develop and show what they're capable of. Again, though, just getting back to this, the core of it, just so happy that racing's back, you know, that you know, can go to Belmont and cover it and present it to people on TV so that, you know, we can start coming out of this. I mean, I know me, other than going off in the mountains and cooking, it's like I was starved for horse racing. And I'm just thrilled to be a part of it and be back at it.
A couple of notes, Rich. Got about 5 minutes or so before John Sheriffs is going to join us. You talk about coming back. I want to ask you about the stewards' inquiries, and I know you had spent quite a bit of time over the weekend when they came up talking about them. But I do want to bring up one kind of a personal note. We were happy to be able to start running again ourselves, and on Friday, Louis Cardenas gave Minute Mouse a tremendous ride in the second, and you know, she was 45-1, which, and I'll address that separately about some lessons from that. But she was eager to go, Rich, and she was throwing her head. The chart caller actually said sky gazing, and he got her to settle down. And settled down beautifully behind that pedal light of Donks. And she had a chance. I mean, she was facing off against that 2-5 shot of the drop down of Seth Klarman and Chad's, who frankly ended up not getting claimed. I am so impressed. Right? I am so impressed with Cardenas. I mean, it seems like everybody wants to get him on their horses. 7 pounds, and I'm quite impressed.
I'm impressed, too. I was impressed with him over the winter, Steve, you know, before racing was suspended. He's got a great work ethic. You know, there's so many ingredients that go into making a good rider or a young rider that can actually, you know, make it in New York or make it at the upper level. And he's got all the ingredients. Great attitude, amazing attitude, nicest kid, great work ethic. I remember when he won his first race of his career, he was out jogging horses the next day for Leah Giamardi. You know, not I won a race, I'm a jockey, I don't jog horses, I don't gallop horses. No, no. He was out there. It was a sloppy track. He was out there jogging horses for us. And what you said with Minute Mouse, she's got nice hands, and that's something either you have or you don't. I mean, you can get better at it over time, but he's got very nice hands that he can get a horse to settle. And that's a lot of just natural ability horses run for him. And, you know, when a kid is young and has that attitude, that enthusiasm, they win on long shots or bring big price horses in to hit the board because they believe they can win. They go out there believing in their heart they're going to win. And they're excited to be out there. They're thrilled for the opportunity. Horses feed on that energy. It's when you get older and beat up and physically, you know, broke down, and you go, why am I on this horse? The horse feels that. You go, this guy don't have confidence. I don't have confidence. And it never works. You know, you see it all the time. When I was a kid, I wanted horses when I was an apprentice, $160, $200, $180. Why? Because I went out there believing I could win, giving them every opportunity to win. And then again, your dance partner is a living, breathing animal that feeds on your energy. You feed on their energy. They believe all of a sudden, you know, they might have been being ridden by great jockeys, but there were different stages of their career where they weren't as enthusiastic about riding this particular horse. And now they get a kid who's not nearly as developed or experienced, but they go, wow, you know, there's a different feeling, and they just run out of their shoes for you know, people with that attitude. So it's fun for me to watch. I really like everything about him. I like him as a human being. I like him, you know, his ability that he's showing, and, of course, his attitude and enthusiasm. I wish all kids had that because I think they stymie themselves from reaching their potential thinking that they're in one place when they're really still at another, and they should just be really thrilled to do it.
Well, looking forward to getting them. We're running Thursday with Carlisle Bell, and was hoping to get him there as well, but he had a call.
You weren't able to get him?
No, which is okay. I mean, Eric Cancel is going to ride it, and Eric's got both of her wins, and so you know, I'm not. I got no problem with that. But
I said to Gary, "Campbell handles both of them, right?"
Yeah. So
both of them. No, it's good. And you know, listen, I think the Colony on a whole, it's very difficult. You know, to stop racing, the guys that didn't go, like my brother sent Dylan Davis down to Florida to continue riding, but there were a lot of guys that didn't ride for a few months. And as a jockey, to keep yourself physically fit, to keep your weight, maintain your weight properly, is difficult. And from what I see, all these guys really took care of themselves. I'm impressed with a lot of the riding I'm seeing. I think Ray Lou Gutierrez is making a nice impression. A bunch of them. There's just so many good riders there, and you know, we're fortunate that we got such a deep colony.
Rich, John's going to join us, John Sheriffs, momentarily. But before we go, your thoughts on the, you know, the herding situation, and you know, Arad. You know, a lot of people think that you know, the upstairs, they're playing favorites and you know, not calling these as appropriate. Some thoughts on the herding front?
I won't go so far as to say they're playing favorites, but we've seen this over time that there's usually a rider that gets a little more leeway than the others. You know, throughout the history of the game, we've kind of seen that. But I just don't understand, like yesterday, he won the stake by a nose therapist, and I was so thrilled for, you know, Christophe Clément and their crew. Just a tragic day for them, you know, a horrible accident on the Jersey Turnpike with their van. But you're hitting right-handed. You come down three paths. Jose Ortiz, his brother's inside. Ray Lou Gutierrez is trying to ride forward, but responsibly at the same time. And if you watch the head-on, he's cocking his horse's head out slightly to try to offset that, you know, drift towards the fence. And he did make contact. It wasn't a huge bump, but they did make contact about a stride and a half before the wire, maybe two strides before the wire. And you can clearly see it because the stride after the wire, Ray Lou looked to his left because you could hear Jose Ortiz yelling from the third floor on the set we were at. And I turned around and I saw him look the stride after the wire. So you know the contact happened before the wire because of where Ray Lou looked. He looked when it was after the wire. So you see the bump before that. And how is it not inhibiting his forward progress if he's having to cock his horse's head out to try to hold off this pressure from the outside? And you get beat a nose. And I don't understand how that doesn't come down. And you say, well, it wasn't a lot of contact. Well, it was still inhibiting his forward progress. If he had completely disregarded Jose Ortiz inside of him and just followed the herding in, following the drifting in, well, Jose Ortiz probably, you know, at worst is going to fall, and at best is going to really have to take up and check. So why is it his responsibility to protect someone else when the guy outside of him is causing the problem?
Exactly, and this, the people just want to see it called consistently. I'm glad we got it in, Rich. And Rich, before I let you go, I think we've got John Sheriffs on with you, and so you can say hi to John yourself. John, Rich Migliori with us.
Hey, Richie.
Hey, John. Congratulations the other day. I was so happy for you. And when I hang up and let you guys speak, I'm going into town to the post office and get your book out to you. It's all packaged up. So.
Okay. Take care.
All right. Thank you, John. Congratulations again, Steve. Always great talking to you.
Rich Migliori, and we'll talk to Rich alternately, hopefully on Mondays on a regular basis, along with Joe Bianca. And as John joins us, I've been promising John that I've got a book to send him, and John, I will do the same thing and get the book that I've been promising you for ages out to you.
Oh, right. Which book is that now?
That's the it's wrapped up. It's been wrapped up for ages, and so I'm going to have to go back. It's one of those historic. You remember you showed me this was back when you had brought Zenyatta to Churchill, and you showed me and the same kind of thing, a historic survey, and that's what this is by Colonel. I want to say Colonel Wall, and it's called Great Running Horses.
Oh, great! Yeah.
And I knew when I found it that you would absolutely love it. And I've been every time I come west, I say I've got to bring it, and I forget it, and then I promise to send it. And when Richie said this earlier this morning, just a half an hour ago, he said, "Tell sheriffs that I'm sending him his book." I said, "I'm going to do the same thing."
All right. Well, thanks.
John, thanks for the visit, and we looked on and watched you preparing Honor AP, and it seemed that you know you were going to take advantage of this opportunity, you know, talk about winning another Santa Anita Derby.
Yeah, this was well, each one is special, obviously, for the individual horse, and so Honor AP. We were just, after the San Felipe, we had a little delay, so we had to start over again with him. So this was a really important race for Honor AP and the whole barn. And he just trained really well for the race. We never missed any time for him, with him. So it just worked out really well.
This, of course, you know, these are starting to pile up a little bit for you, and we think back to Gormley winning, and before that, Tiago, and
right.
You know, you've had really lots of success pointing for this, but this is different because you know, here it comes, you know, 2 months later than it was supposed to be.
Yeah, so you know, bringing up those two horses, and now Honor AP. So Tiago was a horse that. We had a lot of trouble with him lugging in. So, for the Santa Anita Derby, we put an extension bridle, extension bit on the other way, so he wouldn't lug in. And then he ran straight, and it worked out really well. Gormley was a Malibu Moon who was very aggressive, and was you know how they are. They like to play, and they're aggressive, and so we had to find a way to sort of calm him down and settle him enough that he could go the mile and eighth in a decent manner. And then Honor AP is like the opposite of all of them because he's a horse with a big stride. He's got a really nice stride, so he needed to learn to keep extending his stride and carrying it as far as he could and leveling off. It's always about putting him in a big frame and having him level off so he can maximize the use of his stride. So, you know, those are three different horses and had to approach the Derby three different ways.
Well, and with the successful results, and of course, no conversation between you and I about this horse and a few others is not going to go too far without bringing up my favorite living mare and Hollywood Story, The Gift That Keeps on Giving.
Oh yeah, no, isn't that something? I was just thinking about that, and so I have her picture on the wall when she won the Starlet, and Hollywood Story was a really amazing mare. She had so much heart and obviously tons of talent, and she always had the will. You know, she always wanted to win. One time she got left really badly, or I can't remember if she got left or stumbled going in the first turn, picked herself up and won the race. So she was a winner.
One of the most amazing, if for people that like to pull up charts and past performances, there aren't too many horses. Recent history or previous, going back, who ran in a maiden race and then never ran in anything else but stakes the rest of her career, and of course broke her maiden in the Hollywood Starlet.
Right.
It's too bad. The one thing that The one thing we can't do, John, anymore is see her progeny at Hollywood Park, where she won all her races.
That's really tragic. Hollywood Park was such an integral part of California racing, and it really was sad to see it close.
Well, and for you, where you that was your base, right? I mean, until...
Oh, no, I love that track.
How long?
That was a mile and eighth track. We had a little bridle path through a little wooded area to get to the quarter chute. We had a training track out in the back, so when the horses came out of the barn and they turned right, they went to the training track, they knew, oh, okay, it's an easy day. They turned the other direction, oh, we're going to the main track. Uh-oh, something's going on.
I love it. John, one thing that we talked about going in on the preview side of things leading into the race, these assignments, grade ones, they are goals in their own right. Talk about balancing readiness and having a horse finely tuned versus the long-term goal. And of course, you still are looking towards September. I mean, that's the end game here.
Right. Yeah. So it is difficult, right? Because as you get closer to the race, you start asking the horse to do more, train a little harder, maybe gallop a little farther. So you have to be very careful that you don't overdo it, because you want them mentally desiring to do more, and that's one of the keys.
That kind of the imagery that I get, hearing that is the proverbial, squeezing the lemon. You don't want to take too much of the lemon out.
All right. Yeah. No, because when you ask them, right, when they're running and that last eighth of a mile or 16th of a mile comes up and they have to reach down deep to get it, you want them to do it. You want them to feel like they can do it. You want them to feel like there's something really special and they can reach down and do it. So, you want them mentally really about racing.
Looking at what you accomplished Saturday and the way the calendar now spills out, what's your thought? What's the reaction?
I really haven't thought too much about it. I'm kind of lucky if I can think two or three days ahead of time. So now you're asking weeks or months. Oh my God! See, that's impossible.
Yeah, exactly. I hear you. Well, if you had to guess, runs twice more between now and September. How does he react to his performances? How did he come out of this?
He came out of the race really well. First thing you look for is, the next morning, did he eat up? Yeah, he ate all his grain, and he was, his legs were nice, no problems there. And so you look at his attitude, when you look at him, how bright is his eye, right, in the morning? And he still has a bright eye, and that's a plus. And he goes out and walks, and you sort of get a vision of his overall appearance. Has he tucked up too much? Can I see his ribs too much? How's he holding his head? Has his head down too low, or is he alert looking around? So, all those little things you just kind of watch, and then you decide what to do next. But I was telling somebody, for the first week, let the horse kind of dictate what you should do, right? Try to do something that that he would want to do.
Well, for the CRK team, they've been big win, and they've had their share. Talk about winning a race like this for them.
Mr. Searing is such a nice gentleman, and his wife Susan, they're just really nice people. And winning a grade one for owners is like a big reward for the trainer, You endeavor to win races, and if you can win a grade one or a graded stake, that's a big plus for your relationship with that owner.
Now, and of course, this is the first time we've seen the Laker colors, obviously, since the NBA suspended the season.
Oh yeah, that's Kobe Bryant fan. He loves Kobe. He's a big fan.
Well, exactly, and Kobe's back, and on that topic, I suppose as well, we should touch on mid-court's effort. Some thoughts about the Gold Cup.
Well, the Gold Cup was a disaster for midcourt. I don't know exactly what happened at the gate, but Victor said he started to move just as the gate opened, so he didn't get out of the gate at all. It kind of hopped up in the air, and then he got behind horses, got a lot of dirt in his face, and Victor tried to go inside. Then he had to check, take him back. Then he went to the outside, and all that time getting a lot of dirt, so. It went from bad to worse for midcourt, but fortunately he looked really good after the race, and I'm sure he'll have another opportunity at Del Mar.
Well, I'm going to guess, you know, the Pacific Classic, the immediate target.
Yeah, that or the San Pasqual, one of the two.
Okay. Well, and also since we're touching base on some of the other performances, the Santa Maria effort going back to last week, hard not to love.
Yeah, I just visited the Stewarts about that.
No, yeah, some thoughts. Because, what
getting her to the gate? Oh, it was very difficult to get her to the gate. We sort of made a mistake with her. And we took her past the gap on the track. So, and then she stood, just standing there for about 4 minutes. Then it was time to go to the gate, and she said, "No, I don't think I'm going to go to the gate today," to the phony boy. So it took us a while to get her motivated to go to the gate. But you know, after she got in the gate, and during the race, Mike was really happy with her because. We wanted her to come from off the pace. She's not good when she goes to the lead. So it was worked out really well. Maybe he got a little farther back than he wanted, but she made a nice run at the end, and I think she's a really nice filly, and I'm excited to see her run so well.
Well, and the filly and mare, the whole distaff division, John, is exciting. I mean, it feels like every week we're getting another name added, and we'll, you know, look forward, I suppose, Clement Hirsch for her.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah,
I do want to ask.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. I'm going to come back because I've got a different horse to ask about, but follow up.
I was just going to say, Hard Not to Love looks so good after a race, and when she does that, it's not like she's nervous or anxious at all. She just has a little bit of a stubborn streak to her. So we're just working on getting her to respond a little bit better in that regard.
Nice. The way you describe that too, it reminds me of the way Bobby Frankel used to talk about Honest Lady and all the, you know, all the that whole family that just sometimes they've got, you know, sometimes they're smarter than some of their stable mates. They've got a little more going on upstairs.
Oh yeah, she's very smart.
Yeah, and they like to have things, you know, they get bored and you know, they get out of that stall. They, you know, there's things that they've got some things on their mind sometimes. Got to ask you, speaking of, you know, history, you've got a Wygod maiden winner that worked yesterday and broke the maiden on that. Last weekend?
Yeah.
John Zest for the Y Gods. They had a huge weekend. The Y Gods. They had two winners with Cliff Seiss and Zest with you. This is the Tappet filly out of Life is Sweet.
Oh no! Isn't that, for me, that was very special because my association with Life is Sweet, so
yeah.
No, she's real. Zeth is a very nice filly, and she's one of those really happy horses. You know, you go to her, go to her stall in the morning. She's got her head out. She's watching what's going on. She's just a really nice horse to be around, and I think she has a lot of talent. Obviously, you saw that in the race. She can show speed, she can close, she can do a lot of things.
You're going to see her before the end of the meet, or wait for Del Mar?
Del Mar. I think there's a race for her opening week at Del Mar.
Excellent. Well, John, a lot of excitement, obviously, for Honor AP, the big win in the Santa Anita Derby, and now we'll start to look toward a summer assignment, and whether it's out of town or whatever it may be, wouldn't mind seeing you. Would you be averse to running Travers and Derby? Is that something that might make sense?
Well, you know, and you have to keep in mind that California is on the other side of the Great Divide, so
yes,
you have to get over the Rocky Mountains.
don't be invoking those pesky Rockies, John. That's a famous sobriquet. You're the greatest, John. I'm looking forward to seeing you wherever it's going to be soon. But Honor AP and much more going on in the barn. And well done, congratulations to everybody.
Thanks, Steve.
Always fun. John Sheriffs. And keep an eye on Zest. I'm glad I brought her up. And she worked half mile already back yesterday. When did she, let me see something, when did she break her maiden? That was a couple of weeks, two, it was after things got started again at Santa Anita. So for her to come back and work a half like that, let me see here. Give me one second. We'll head to the break. Tom Ventura is going to join us. We'll get a preview and get those of you that want to bid online starting tomorrow, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, the 4 days of sale at OBS. We're going to make sure you understand what to do. So let's see what transpired here. Zest broke her maiden on May 24th. May 24th, and she had been away since June of last year as a two-year-old, and this is a serious filly. I mean, a Tappet out of Life is Sweet. So from a pedigree standpoint, you know, the Why God homebred. And then yesterday she went her first work back, and she went a half a mile in 49 flat. So Zest. Just like the soap. Z-E-S-T. All right. John Sheriffs. Always fun. And now I've got to send the book that I promised him ages ago. I'm pretty sure it's Colonel Wall. It's packaged. So it's just a question of, I kept saying to myself, well, I'm not going to ship it. I'm going to be out there. And every time I go, I forget to put it in the suitcase. So, in fact, I think one time, I think I did bring it and then forgot to bring it to the track. So this has been a long time coming. And, whenever it was that Zenyatta came in, you know, leading up to Derby, it was Derby week, and John had brought her, and then when the track came up wet, he bypassed, and I'm going to forget, probably it wasn't, maybe the La Troyenne, maybe, that they were pointing for, and I told him, so that's how far back this goes, this crazy book that I've been promising to send him. Let's take a break, probably, might be our last of the morning, and when we come back, Tom Ventura will be down at Ocala where they're looking at these two-year-olds. They're going to have a bunch of new homes starting tomorrow. 4 days of horse sale. Back after this, hour three, about 10 minutes in at the races.
The latest racing news. It's at the races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
If you are racing two-year-olds in California, Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Here in Pennsylvania, we have the best breeding program in the country, thanks in part to our Racehorse Development Trust Fund. It's a trust, it's not tax dollars, and by law, our fund is completely protected. These are difficult days for all of us. When life in America gets back to normal, and it will, our PA breeding program will be here, stronger and better than ever. To learn more about how we're protecting the trust, go to PABred.com to watch a short video.
How's it going, Sue?
Hey!
Have you seen this commercial?
What career track are you on?
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck.
Isn't that the horse racing school that Bob Baffert went to?
Yeah, Todd Fletcher, too, and lots of other major players in every area of the industry.
Really? Like what?
Well, for starters, we have graduates who are executives at Churchill Downs, NYRA, Darley America, Gulfstream, Keeneland, you name it. They're also regulators, racing officials, bloodstock agents, track announcers. My class had a job placement rate of almost 90%.
Wow, what other college program has results like that?
What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on.